Hello, anybody. My name is Dave Wilson, and if you can hear the sound of my voice and all this stuff works, we're about to embark on an adventure together that I call Dave Wilson's Part of Radio Liberty. Yes, Dr. Stan is still away from the microphone, and he will be gone for the rest of this week, so keep him in your prayers for safety as he travels and provision for the things that he needs to do while he's away from this microphone. He'll be back as the Lord tarries on Monday, but until then, I get to play with all this stuff here and have great guests and warn you, most importantly, that the views that you're about to hear on this live radio program are my views and the views of our guests, and of course they could be your views if you elect to give us a call later on at 464-8295 locally here in the Monterey Bay area, or 888-245-4237 if you're anywhere else in these United States or around the world or whatever. We'll drop the dollar and a half or whatever it costs now for that call. We'd love to talk to you if you have a view about it. And we've got a great program for you today, something that I've been looking forward to for these many days now, because a friend of mine is on the line with us, and he is a man who has instituted something that I've used many, many times in my conversations with people. It really, really comes down to putting together the thought in a memorable way of what's going on in the world today, and that is simply GPS, and I don't mean global positioning satellites, but something else. Hi, John, are you there?
Yeah, we are here.
Hey, you're using that one this time, huh?
Well, I always do. It has a slight note of authority. I'm not sure if whatever. Anyway.
Well, I'm humbled, and I'm going to just sit further back from the microphone, but GPS is something that excited me when I first heard it come out of your mouth several years ago now, because, you know, it was right on in terms of an acronym that people can remember. But what does it mean? Tell us about it, okay?
Well, it means global pantheistic socialism. And a long time ago, I was trying to figure out a word that would sort of express the worldview changes we're in right now. You know, we see this tremendous gulf that is sort of ripping through the U.S., but it's not just the U.S., it's most of the Western world, which we call the developed world.
Right.
And it's a shift away from freedom and towards a new type of paradigm, which really ironically looks like a combination of fascism combined with feudal serfism in a modern form, if that makes any sense.
Well, in other words, a big division, no middle class type thing?
Pretty much so, because that's the way things are spreading out.
Seems to be that's the way it's working here in this neck of the woods over here on the left coast. I see children of friends of mine and others unable to live where they were raised, an increasing number of people who can't afford to live in their hometowns, having to move away, an inability to earn a living, and so here comes the undocumented aliens to take care of all that stuff.
I just wrote an article about that. I said, about the collapse of socialism, or the fact that California is really sort of a microcosm of what faces the rest of the nation. You know, and I lived in California for a good 15 years. Mm-hmm. worked in the Bay Area, went to high school in Southern California, worked for radio stations all over the place. One of our fun things used to be to grab a Cessna 150 and fly all over the state on a weekend or something like that. That was when you could afford to do it.
It was like $18 to $20 an hour to fly.
Hey, listen, Pacific Southwest Airlines used to be $30 round trip L.A. to San Francisco. I mean, I was a broke college student at the time, and I could afford that.
Those were the good old days. I can remember flying those, not with Pacific Southwest, but certainly challenging it. That's another whole program, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Anyway. That is another whole program. But anyway,
let's talk a little bit about, in order, global pantheistic socialism. And the first one, I think, is perhaps equally as important as the other two. I was sitting there this afternoon trying to say, well, you know, is one of these more important to the average Joe listening to this program today, or are they all equally important? And they all are raising their heads in an ugly fashion when you begin to examine it. I know you're a guy who tends to connect the dots for people in your weekly radio program, Steel on Steel, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you can access at steelonsteel.com and listen to this program. John gets some really, really good guests, And we'll give you more information about that later on. But global. Now, the word global is a word that has been infused into our everyday conversations, John, and it's in our House of Representatives, it's in the Senate. And if we don't think globally, we're thought of as sort of being out of sorts and mean-spirited anymore, aren't we?
I don't care what they think. The problem is that most of the people who talk in those veins never bother to define what they mean. So, you know, one of the three rules that Leffler always says you have to do when somebody says something in politics is the first statement has to be, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
The second one is, how will it be implemented or enforced? The third one is, who will pay for it? And actually, there's a fourth one I keep forgetting because I've created it, and that is it mandatory or voluntary? And how long is it going to be voluntary before it becomes mandatory? Because, so we're moving into this new global society, and of course people will say, well, you see, we're all one world today, yada, yada, yada. Well, that's true. I mean, let's face it, communications and everything and economics have done that. But when we talk about globalism, we talk about imposing a new form of global governance. That's the term that you keep finding appearing in all of these books and articles and speeches written by these people. They keep talking about global governance. And of course, you can't have governance, you can't govern something unless you have a set of rules, and that's called law.
Mm-hmm.
So the question you have to ask, what is this law going to look like? And the new global governance they're talking about is nothing like the type of law we have here in this country. As I mentioned, it is a new network between big government and big business worldwide, shoving out the little guy and literally managing every part of your life from womb to tomb, from what you believe, who you marry, who you share your genes with, you know, virtually everything you can think of, you will have a slot. Everything in its place and a place for everybody, you know?
Now, when this is promulgated out, it strikes me that a lot of people have already been indoctrinated as opposed to educated into being more than willing to accept that womb to tomb idea.
Well, they are now, because that comes with what is called the consensus process. And the consensus process, sometimes called the Delphi technique, the Diaprax process, the process, total quality management, it's all based on a project that came out of the Frankfurt, Germany. excuse me, I'm gagging something here. the Institute for Marxist Research.
Uh-huh.
And they had to flee Germany in the 30s, and they came to this country, and they set up shop at Columbia University, where they then founded the basics for the teachers' programs here in this country, all based on a Marxist process that came out of Gramscian Marxism. And the RAND Corporation picked that up and began to introduce it into the business place, and now it's being introduced into the churches. So if your church is one of these purpose-driven churches, you now have Marxism in your church, you just don't know it.
Right. Well, it's come under so many beguiling terms anymore and names, and it's being published by formerly what I consider to be evangelically oriented publishing houses, and it's almost shameful to my way of thinking how much action this thing is getting, and people are not investigating it. They're just like sheep going to the fodder.
Well, and to be honest with you, the whole consensus process, let's bring it full circle to what you just said, the consensus process is designed to move people towards a predetermined outcome, which they don't know they're moving towards, but which they think they have come up with on their own.
Right.
And that's why the whole thing. And it is literally designed. It's literally a narcotic. Anybody who begins engaging in what I think Steve Goss or Dean Gocher would call the process finally gets this glassy look on their face, and they're unable to determine what's going on because the whole process is one that geared to get you to shed your values and adopt new values without even realizing you're making a compromise, that type of thing.
And this is an absolute necessary step for world governments to come about, because we here in the United States, it's a marvelous experience that's been going on these 200-plus years, our form of democracy and a democratic republic, if you will, where the people have somewhat of a say about what's going on. You know, there are certain theories about that anymore, too. But we have been blessed by God, I believe, because I believe the Founding Fathers understood the human nature, and they constructed a government with three branches to it that have heretofore been fairly effective in holding down the natural state of man. But if people understand that, then they won't want to lose it. But they need to lose that in order to embrace this globalism, and that's what's happened in education ever since the 60s, as I see it.
Right, and as we embrace the globalism, understand that what we are doing is we're taking large chunks of national sovereignty, not just we, Canadians are doing it, people in Europe are doing it, everybody's doing it, and they're turning them over to unelected, unaccountable bodies like the World Trade Organization, etc., that make large determinations of policy and regulation and law that has to be enforced by these the member countries. But you're moving further and further and further away from representative government. And so there's no real set of rights. There's also a new what's called the public-private partnership. So every time you hear these, you should flinch.
Right.
Because while it sounds so nice, what it means is that, you see, the socialists have recognized they have run out of their capacity to deliver. Socialism always does. It promises hell, heaven, and gives you hell. And we're just about at that point. California's at a point. California has dug this hole for itself, okay, by promising more benefits than it could provide and promising everybody else that they were going to soak the rich. Well, guess what? History always shows there are just not enough doggone rich people out there to soak, even in California, okay? And so sooner or later, what is called rich now comes crashing down on the middle class. So socialism can never, never, never deliver. And the socialists of the world, those who were in love with the Socialist International, which is sort of a thinly masked communist-type front. And communism is alive and well in many places around the world, including in academic institutions in our country.
Particularly
so.
Yeah.
And they realize that they're going to have to do something. So they're striking up this new partnership, which is a public-private partnership, to offload a lot of their responsibilities onto the private partnerships. Now, the private partnerships don't exactly know exactly... In other words, if you're confronted with regulations or you got to do's or whatever, you don't know now who you're dealing with. Do you have a government agency that you're working with on this, or is it a private agency? Look at for example, requirements in California to build a new house or something like that. Half the time you'll be dealing with a private type of agency that has nothing to do with government, but that government turns a chunk of its power over to give you a yay or a nay on whether you can build your house. So now the question is, when you disagree with somebody, whom do you go to? What are your rights of appeal? What's the process? And quite frequently you find out that you're between a rock and a hard place. You just
Absolutely.
Have no recourse. And it's strung so well as to keep you in this thing. So when you talk about globalism, the first part of it, you really have to ask, what is this global governance going to look like? And it is not representative government with all the rights that we have built into it now.
I talked with Tom DeWeese yesterday at length about this new H.R. 1078, which is going through now, which is called the American History and Civics Education Act of 2003, which is being put out by the Center for Civics Education. I'm sure you're familiar with it. And some of the stuff that's in there is bone-chilling about the way they have changed their attitude or supplemented, I should say, an agenda for our school children, giving them tests that put as naught the ideas of liberty, the Founding Fathers' ideals. Certainly religion and spirituality is playing no part in any of this. And they're changing that around so that they're actually defining or redefining civics. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk more about that with John Loeffler as we come back from our first break on this Thursday afternoon with your Dave Wilson's edition of Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan is flying around the countryside doing the things that he does best, and I'm very privileged to be able to sit in here for him. I'd like to remind you, as I want to do on occasion, that if you enjoy this kind of radio, we'd love to have you join us shoulder to shoulder in underwriting the cost of putting these programs on the air. And you can do that simply by calling 1-800-544-8927 and saying to that person who answers, hey, I'd like to become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. For your $20 or more a month, we'll send you the four best tapes of the month and Dr. Stan's newsletter and all kinds of good stuff that will help you find out that area that you need to become an expert in so that you can talk to the people who live around you, who stand around you, and so forth and so on. Anyway, the number, 800-544-8927, and inquire about becoming a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We'll be right back with John Loeffler in just a minute.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. They go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
And we're back with our second quarter hour of this edition of Radio Liberty. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate your listening, and we hope that you're encouraged and edified by what we're talking about today. John Loeffler is my guest. He lives just a little bit right of the left coast and is a longtime friend of this program. Does his own program called Steel on Steel. And John, will you tell us just a little bit more about that website of yours, where they might go?
Well, you can actually listen online. I know we're on the air in some places in California, but we're online at steelonsteel.com, and people can take out a subscription. We make the program. It's a 90-minute-a-week news program. We're intense. We've always been cutting edge. The first time we mentioned Osama bin Laden on the program was in 1996. So that shows you how far ahead we were, and we spent quite a bit of time in the late 90s warning that there was this a period of rather intense instability was coming, along with the Islamic attacks from radical Islam on you know, our soil here. I kept repeating it will come home, it will come home, and of course we were the lone voice. You know, we're not prophets. What we do is we don't, first of all, I disregard everything Peter, Dan, and Tom say, aside from analyzing it for propaganda purposes. What I do is I read, we take a lot of time, the people I associate with, reading the speeches that people are making, the articles they're writing. We also read the intelligence publications. And if you clear out the Democratic and Republican filters that everybody in those parties are seeing and try to see things and say, what's really going on here, and put the political blather on either side, you can finally figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, as I've been saying lately, as far as some of the stuff going on in Iraq and how we got into this war on terror, some of the things I'm reading in the liberal columns on the liberal sites or libertarian sites, they're much more correct than the conservative sites. The conservatives have been duped into going along with the neocons, not realizing the Republican Party is hijacked. The problem on the Democratic side is that they have it right, but for the wrong reasons. They keep looking at it because it's Republicans, and Republicans are in big business, and they take care of big business, and they shaft the little guy. Well, in reality, everybody shafts the little guy who's in politics, whether you happen to be a Democrat or Republican. It's all big business, and it's all rigged against you.
And there is hope, however, if we just keep on listening to Steel on Steel or steelonsteel.com, talking to you and Radio Liberty. We're trying to equip everybody with some kind of something to do. But, you know, we're, what, about three, at least two generations into this business now, where the educators of our country have been very, very liberal. And this new civics business is only an outworking of the fact that those two generations have come by. They're in our universities now. They're certainly tenured people in schools. And then the new teachers coming out of this consider those goals to be correct. In fact, this new civics program, one of the test questions that they have, the answers has stuff to do like this. It says, issues of economic competition, the environment, and the movement of peoples around the world require an awareness of political associations that are larger in scope than the nation state. Well, that sounds really good, and it is true in many respects, but they completely poo-poo the idea that there should be any notion of sovereignty, and that's what's so scary to me,
right.
Anyway.
The real bad line is what they never, that sounds really good,
mm-hmm.
but remember what were the four rules that I introduced at the beginning of the program?
Right.
What does that mean? Okay, when we say we have to get beyond 70, well, somebody has to control something. You see, remember the whole argument about abortion, you shouldn't push your values on other people? Well, the people that kept used to saying that never really stopped to think about that for a second, because the very act of making law in Sacramento, say, for example, is the pushing of values on people.
Of course.
There has to be some order. Without order, there's chaos, all right? So it's just a question then of whose values and whose rules will be pushed on people. That's the difference.
There you go.
So, well, it's nice to say, well, we have to get beyond this, but to whom are you turning over the power? Who will be the authority? The UN? Excuse me? I'd rather have the devil, okay? Because they already have a track record that's abysmal. And so what kind of a new order are we moving into? What kind of a new paradigm shift? And that's what the whole globalism thing is all about. And the other thing, you know, you talk about this. I read through my daughter's college textbook on the history of the 20th century last year. She's in her last year of college.
Uh-huh.
And I really got very irked by the time I got to the end of it, because they interpreted all of U.S. foreign policy during the Cold War, post-World War II, as due to some sort of a paranoid fear of communism. And the implication was that it was unwarranted. In other words, that there was no problem with it. It was just two different cultures, that communist and that capitalist, and they just had differences of opinion. Now, I got really irked by that. They were totally soft on communism, almost apologetical for it. Never said a bad thing about the 130 million people that died under communism. See, they'll always go after Hitler because Hitler they perceive to be right-wing.
Right.
And whereas Stalin and Lenin were left-wing. Now, they killed multitudes more than Hitler ever did.
Absolutely, okay? But not known by a lot of people, unfortunately.
Correct. And there's a new book out I'm going to have the authors on that says, you know what's really tragic is that they're almost acting as apologists for the communist movement. And that the reason for that being, by the way, you know, I've always said a communist is simply a socialist in a hurry with a gun. That's the only difference.
You got it.
Is that they really do favor those ideas. They favor big government, a graduated tax system, complete government control of education. If you go down the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, you'll find that the majority of college professors agree with them. Without knowing it or not, they've actually become closet Marxists, even though we put a different name on it. And we have. We've totally revised our history.
And we've told everyone that communism is dead. That just shows what's going on. Is we've given a different name. We've put a few different terms on it. That's why I like global pantheistic socialism so much, because it just clearly defines the three prongs of the stuff that we ought to be observing. Now, here's let's go ahead and move on to into the pantheistic bit here just for a minute. I have a minute before we go to our next break. And Santa Cruz, of course, being on the cutting edge of all kinds of stuff, some good, some bad, often weird, unfortunately, for those of us who live here, although that may improve our value of our homes. I don't know. Yesterday, or today, anyway, our mayor, Emily Riley, mayor of Santa Cruz, does hereby proclaim October 24th, the year 2003, which is tomorrow, Friday, as Sentient Beings Day in the city of Santa Cruz, and encourage all citizens to join me in recognizing farm animals as sentient beings who deserve to be treated with respect and protected from inhumane treatment. Have you heard about that one yet?
No, I mean, I can't say that I exactly disagree with that, but there's some more things. Once again, you have to ask, first question, what does that mean?
Really, what does that mean? This comes into our pantheistic thing, and they have been lobbied, in my perspective, into beginning to believe, as just the first step along of the PETA argument about animals and so forth. Certainly contrary to a biblical notion of why certain animals are here.
Listen, when we come back, let's talk about the great disconnect between that and Darwinism, because it's sort of interesting. You'll enjoy this one, but let's do it when we come back.
Okay. Before we go, ladies and gentlemen, let me just remind you that we're talking with John Loeffler. His website is Steel on Steel, like the metal, not like the actor. And steelonsteel.com. Go there to find out about his broadcast, how you can help support and underwrite his cause as well as ours. And let me remind you that a good thing for you to do would be call 800 800- 544-8927. Ask for a copy of the Radio Liberty resource packet, and we'll send you that free and postpaid. Won't put your name on any kind of a list or anything, and that'll be valuable information to you, and I'll get back at you with more information about that when we come back from this 60-second break, which starts right now.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam and Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 and that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
We're talking about global pantheistic socialism here on Radio Liberty this afternoon, and gosh, there's all kinds of ways that you can begin to inform yourself, but I know that there are people listening to the sound of this program who are saying, good grief, you're sitting there talking about all this stuff and it can't possibly be true. These guys couldn't possibly be having that sort of an agenda. Communism really was kind of benign and it's dead anyway, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to challenge you, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who are thinking in that fashion, to get a copy of the free and postpaid Radio Liberty Resource List book for October. Or if you dally, you'll get a November one, I suppose. Anyway, in there you'll find all about the books and DVDs and tapes and everything that Dr. Stan and his associates have put together for your education and edification. One of the things that I want to say as being perhaps one a first step, shall I say, for all of you out there who haven't taken a step towards trying to figure out what's going on, is call up the number 800-544-8927 and ask for a copy of the Norman Dodd tape. It's just a single tape. It's $10. It's STDODD01, but they'll know, you know, just write this down, Norman Dodd. And he was the director of research for the Reese Committee investigation, which looked into these tax-exempt foundations years ago. And as you listen to this actual interview between Dr. Stan and Norman Dodd, done many, many years ago, I think your eyes will be opened very broadly when you hear what he has to say as to what was going on and what continues to go on, even with more vigor here in these United States. That tape, again, is called Norman Dodd, and the number to call is 800-544-8927. But now we're going to talk about the disconnect from Darwinism with John Loeffler. John, what were you talking about when you were beginning?
Well, it's an important one because it shows the, and we'll work right up to pantheism, okay?
Okay.
Since that's the second item of the thing. We've had this competition going on in the schools, you know, should it be Darwinism or creationism? And that's when the arguments are always posed like that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But let's assume that Darwinism is correct, okay? We'll just throw that one out there and plop it on the table. Darwinism is correct. There always was a world, or we started in the Big Bang. We don't know how we came from before the Big Bang, but that's okay. And given a series of processes, a random chance, over millions and millions of years, molecules began to organize themselves into more and more, more and more complex patterns and organisms, etc., ultimately coming up with a DNA code, which is a digital, error-correcting, redundant, self-replicating code, which is more complex than any code we've ever developed for computers.
Mm-hmm.
And that it did all of this by random chance. In other words, by the process of natural selection in survival of the fittest. Okay? Now, that you will find taught in virtually every biology class in the country. Now, we make this big jump from there. And then all of a sudden, you see, now here are the philosophical implications of that, if it is true. And this is not an argument against it. This does not argue against it. I'm just saying, if it is true, here's the deal. If there is no God, then anything that is right. Okay, there is no right or wrong.
Right.
It's simply what? Survival of the fittest. This is called social Darwinism. And therefore, any species that has the moxie to survive over another species, even if it runs that other species out of existence, cool! That's the way the whole thing works, right?
Absolutely.
We're all in competition for a niche. But then all of a sudden, the environmentalists come jumping in, and they say, oh no, wait! Every species on the face of the earth has a right to exist. There's the disconnect, okay? Because they suddenly use the word right. Okay, and whenever you talk about a right, you have to say, well, who granted this right? Where does it come from? Can it be abrogated or abridged? Who can revoke it? How is it enforced? Those type of things. And so what they begin saying then is that man, and in many cases you'll find some of the more extreme environmentalists saying, man is an aberrant species. He's a cancer, a crabgrass on the face of humanity and the earth, you know, and this type of thing. And there's where the disconnect lies. Because you see, if everything comes about by survival of the fittest, and Homo sapien has done the best job of evolving, which apparently we have, according to the evolutionists, right?
Right.
Therefore, that's okay. It's okay for us to run other species out of existence, because that's the name of the game, Dave. That's what they tell us in every biology class, right? But then they turn right around and then try to make this other plan whereby, oh no, we have to be sensitive to everyone. Everyone has a right. Now, let me show you this in the social area. If you read history books now, you will hear a lot about imperialism. I've been reading a huge amount of material on the history of Latin America, and you hear the word imperialismo, you know, this type of thing. And imperialism is one of these terms, by the way, coined by Marxists to talk about the U.S. during the Cold War. Remember that. You and I are old enough to remember that, even if they expunge that from the history books now. And imperialism is bad. Why? Well, because it's one culture imposing its view upon another culture, and that's bad, because all cultures are equally good. See, we have another disconnect, because we have a concept of good or bad, equality of cultures. That's not what Darwinism suggests. Darwinism says that the survival of the fittest, the strongest cultures will survive and dominate the less strong cultures. That's the way it's supposed to be under Darwinism.
It's a funny thing, but you're absolutely right. There is a disconnect there. Go on.
Well, and it's an important philosophical disconnect, which is what leads us into the next stage, because Darwinism is beginning to crack. There are enough scientists, especially those in the information sciences, in the philosophies, in the mathematical end of it, and in the molecular end. You know, molecular, at the evolution does function. Microevolution functions at that level. But when you begin to try to talk about a code, a digital code such as the DNA code coming about by random chance, it's in excess of any probability that would be considered tolerable or reasonable, not beyond absurdity, or beyond absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to do something. So now we come up with this pantheistic idea. And what the pantheistic idea does is it says that everybody's opinion and notions of good or bad are all relative. Okay. All religions are equally good. And no one can say that any other religion is equally good or bad. Now, of course, this violates the basic tenet of Darwinism again, because theoretically any religion that would survive better than others would be the more fit religion, right? And the other religions deserve to get drummed out of existence.
Or at least exposed.
So now we have this new thing called pantheism. But what I'm showing you is there's a major disconnect between the people who, first of all, say everything is natural, God is not involved in the picture, there is no God, and everything is simply cold existential chance here upon the face of the earth, then turn around and begin mouthing up a whole bunch of rules about do's and do's nots, shoulds and should's nots, and those are all moral statements. But whenever somebody makes a moral statement, you have to ask your question, well, when somebody says, well, we should allow all of the species on the earth to live, and my question is, why? Now, that doesn't mean I don't believe that, that's just my question to them. In other words, what is your basis for saying that?
And apparently they're sentient beings, a whole lot of them.
Yes, absolutely. Now see, my view of it is a little different. I believe that everything that mankind was put in stewardship over this creation, that all of it is marvelous, and I love all of the animals. I even like snakes, all different types of snakes. They're wonderful creatures.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that we should therefore be good stewards of them and learn how to take care of them and not edge them out of their niches.
And
what I am showing you is, you know, the whole concept of modern environmentalism did not start from the atheistic Enlightenment. It started from the Protestant Reformation, which engendered a sense of personal responsibility, and we first began to see ecological handling of things in the forests of Germany and Norway after the Reformation period, where people began to care for these habitats.
Mm-hmm.
And they had foresters responsible for a section of the forest, for clearing it, for handling the issues and the animals that were on it and protecting them. So all I'm showing you is the disconnect, but now we have a pantheism out there, because the pantheists will tell you that the reason that we have all these wars among ourselves, here's another disconnect, and the disconnect is they say war is bad. But if you remember from Darwinism, war is good, because war lets us establish ourselves as a group or a species against some other competing group or species, right?
Cleans up the gene pool.
Cleans up the gene pool, takes care of all the trouble. But now we're being told war is bad, and the cause of all war is all of our differences. So we can't have any differences. So everybody can believe everything they want, you just can't believe it too strongly, and you can't tell anybody your idea is better than anybody else's idea. This is the whole consensus process. This is the second part of global pantheistic socialism. Everything's A-OK, even when it isn't. This, for example, right now, Dave, is why we're having a very hard time figuring out who our enemies are in the world.
Yeah.
Because we're so busy running around with glazy-eyed, you know, everybody's okay, and we don't really, you know, it's...
We want to help you. We want to help you. Why are you killing me?
Right, exactly. I want to help you. Why are you killing me, et cetera. Now, and let me give you the disconnect. The disconnect here is everybody who's attacking us are doing so in the name of Allah against the great Satan.
Exactly.
But we can't say that because why? Well, it might offend somebody. you see the nonsense here, and I go, okay, I don't believe every Muslim out there is out to get us. But I also understand we have a radical collision of paradigms and worldviews going on here.
Yeah, and if anybody believes anything to the degree that they are willing to die for it, you're labeled a zealot, fanatic, or whatever. Now, Christianity is one of those things that's coming under attack here in the United States particularly. People are getting braver and braver about making it look ridiculous as a belief system on TV, on listening to programs on the radio, certainly in the print media, and we have a case of that going on right now where Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin has been caught on video in uniform and in a church, in a pulpit of a church, telling about his belief system to a bunch of Baptist people, and people are just absolutely livid that this occurred. What's your thought on that?
Well, you know, it's funny, but I did think that under the First Amendment of the Constitution, Congress was prohibited from making any law prohibiting the free exercise of religion.
Mm-hmm.
You see, what we have bought into, you talk about historical revisionism, we have bought into the myth of what is called separation of church and state. But separation of church and state is nowhere ever, ever mentioned in the Constitution. Okay, it says that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor prohibit the free exercise thereof. And so in the name of the first part, we have now violated the second part. That's his opinion. He should have a right to it. Now you need to understand this whole new consensus process. Remember two facts. Tolerance is not tolerant. Diversity is not diverse. Okay?
Yeah.
They never have been. They tolerance and diversity only respects those things that agree with it. Let me give you an example. People say we should be tolerant of other people, therefore right-wing hate groups. You know, we have up here the Aryan Nations, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're a small group of people. The media's made, you know, 50 families at worst, I guess. Not even that much, my wife says to me as I'm talking here.
Thank
and
you,
everything. Man. And people will say, we have to fight hate. Now, wait a minute. I thought you said we had to be tolerant. Oh, yes, but we can't be tolerant of intolerant people. Ah! So now we've automatically said, oh, that means we're not going to tolerate certain classes. So you're intolerant, okay? Because from this point on, it's just a question of who we're going to tolerate and who we're not going to tolerate. Now, if you want real tolerance, then you have to have Jewish people out there expressing their viewpoints, and you have to have anti-Semitic people out there expressing their viewpoints. That's tolerance. As soon as you're going to make one group shut up, then you're intolerant. That doesn't mean I agree with that group or even think those groups need to be associated with. But theoretically, at one time, this was America, where being a radical kook was how the country grew. Do you remember that, Dave?
Mm.
Okay, the people who were radicals at the time, you know, I always remember the famous line from Stan Freberg's History of the United States. I don't know if you ever heard it or not, but it's where Ben Franklin's at home on a Saturday evening, and there's a knock on the door, and it's Tom Jefferson. And, well, hi, Tom, what do you want? He says, well, Ben, I got this petition I've been circulating around the neighborhood. It's, I call it a Declaration of Independence, you know. And he says, what? You wild-eyed radicals, left-wing liberals, you know. And it's true.
And they would have been.
Right. And every major leap forward was militated, you know, by people who had a radical, novel idea. Some were good, some were bad, but that's what made America. And now we're being told that's all bad. See, no one can disagree with the politically correct views. Now, what this does is then, this, for example, means that certain groups get to express their viewpoints with abandon. Other groups are forced to shut up.
Exactly. General Boykin was quoted as saying simply, because we're a Christian nation, because our foundation and our roots are Judeo-Christian, the enemy is a guy called Satan. Well, Joe Lieberman came unwired about that, and of course all the people who are in the Islamic notion of things, they're saying how hateful, how unloving, et cetera, et cetera. It's bizarre.
Well, see, but do you understand there's a bottom line on all of this, okay? And the bottom line is, the question that needs to be asked is it true? Not, is it unloving? I'm so tired of hearing this. This is mean-spirited. Now, I if you want to see mean-spiritedness, go up to Sproul Plaza up at Berkeley there, not too far from where you are, right?
No kidding, yeah.
Stand out in the middle of the plaza and start talking out loud, and where everybody gives their little speeches out there about real conservative stuff. And I will show you where tolerance ends.
I don't have to go that far, John. There was an article in the local Sentinel here, which is our paper, talking about how last week sometime up at University of California at Santa Cruz, the Republican Club came out in every sense of the word. You know, they set up a card table in front of one of the little cafeterias or something that they have up there on campus, and they began to talk about the things that they hold dear about the basis and the origins of our country, our form of government, and so forth. And the article ended by saying the girl who was the president of the Young Republicans on UCSC, her locker was trashed, people urinated on her door in the dorms, and put up filthy kinds of slogans thereon. So there you go. There's your tolerance.
Now, do you want those tolerant kind of people running your country? But think about it. That's the next generation up.
Yeah, it is indeed. And okay. And that's the third generation away from having any Bible or prayer put into them, most of them. And this notion that everything is okay, however you feel, if it feels good, do
it. But they don't believe that, Dave. But see, that's my point. They don't believe that. It's okay, whatever you feel, as long as what you feel is within the general guidelines and parameters of their paradigm.
Of how I feel,
right. As soon as you express something different, the hatred that comes out of these people is just incredible. It's actually shocking in its veracity. And so that's what I'm wanting. And now the other part of the thing is, and the other people who did trash her locker and do all things felt no compunction whatsoever that this was morally wrong. You see, these people are on a floating moral deck that changes on the basis of how they feel. We used to call it mob rule.
Mm-hmm.
And it can change at the drop of a hat. It is terribly dangerous. It is why our founding fathers gave us a republic and not a democracy.
Exactly.
Because there had to be some buffer between mob rule and the feeling of the moment. And that's sort of what it is. And the funny part is now, is that those values which built the country, and there were things that have always been wrong with every country in the world. Slavery was wrong in this country. But you know what? We got rid of slavery. Mm-hmm. And you know where most of that protest and stuff came from? Inside the Christian churches. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That's where the anti-slavery movement got its fire and fueled it.
Speaking of mob rule, are you through with that thought?
No, the question I was going to ask, how is it that the real solid core values that did build the country are now considered radical and extreme? What happened? And what it is a constant leftist, pro-Marxist drumbeat in the colleges and universities for the last 50 years.
And we can say safely, I believe, that your four steps, the mean, the terms, the implemented, how is it going to be implemented, the next thing you said was money. And I am absolutely convinced that if you follow the money in all of these things, you can find out the core, particularly in our universities. Those who endow foundations, universities have agendas which go back to Norman Dodd's tape, which I talked about earlier, And it's all a big web of intrigue that people don't believe could possibly exist.
It is not a conspiracy. It is an open collaboration of people inside various establishment groups to achieve common goals. They've been very open about it, Dave.
And we've got to stop there for the third break of the day. We're talking with John Loeffler. We'll be back in about 60 seconds or so to close down this conversation for Thursday afternoon. Don't you dare go away. We'll be right back.
This is a fascinating four-tape set, genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-589-BOR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, I was sitting here fooling with all these controls and had a senior moment, John. We were talking about how there really isn't a conspiracy. These folks are wide open about it, and we have corroborating evidence almost wherever you'd like to look if people would just look for it. And I think that's what's gotten people such as yourselves and Dr. Stan and others in trouble sometimes, because you're able to corroborate what you're talking about with facts. Boy, that's really upsetting.
Well, but remember, under the new paradigm, facts are not important. Feelings are.
That's
you know, it is upsetting. And when you confront people, remember we were talking about trashing the locker and stuff.
Right.
That's because whenever there is a person who operates on feelings, when suddenly they realize they're wrong, they can't deal with that. They have a cognitive dissonance is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way to deal with it then is to launch into what's called one of the logical fallacies. You launch an ad hominem attack, which means you attack the veracity of the person, or you launch an ad baculum attack. That means an argument by the club. You simply club him to death or try to harm him to get him to shut up and stop saying things that you don't like. And that's what happens when you deal with this issue.
Let's open up the phone line for just a second here. I know, ladies and gentlemen, you've probably been waiting, and a lot of times people don't want to call in on something like this because they want our guests to talk, and I think we've succeeded in doing that, and I appreciate John for taking out an hour of your time. I know you're a very, very busy man, but if you'd like to join in on the conversation for the fun of it, it's 464-8295 or 888-245-4237. Let's talk to Ben down Salinas Way. How are you today, Ben?
Oh, pretty good. I'm listening with great interest to your guest and your show there. First, my question, first of all, if you believe in the total thing of the Bible, if Adam and Eve were the first two people on the earth, where did the rest of the people come from, and how did they beget the other first woman, whoever she might be? My second question, you seem to think that the social Darwinism thing, so that's, is that to say survival of the fittest? So if we show up on someone else's shores with boatloads and aircraft carriers full of weaponry and nukes and laser-guided discs, we have the right, by Darwin theory, to say do it our way or we can kill you because we're superior, and that's okay? And my third point on the socialism, which you guys like to akin to Marxism and communism, then isn't the fact that we pay for the medical care for 535 of our congressional representatives, Cheney's heart thing there, Bush's hip replacement there, and all of their medical interventions with taxpayer dollars, how come that socialism's okay, but mine and your grandmother needing pills so she wouldn't have to choose between cat food and medicine to survive is not okay? And I'll leave the air, and I hope we can answer some of these, because I'm being sincere, and I listen with interest because I'm willing to hear.
I know you do, Ben.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with the third question. The second one's pretty easy to answer. If Darwinism is the base of your philosophical belief, you can land up on somebody's shore and blow them out to eternity, then it's okay. because who is to say what is right or wrong? If there is no God, as Francis Schaeffer said, then anything that is right. Okay, because all we do is make it up. It simply becomes the rule of the strongest person. But if there is a God, then there is a right and a wrong, because why? Well, he who makes the universe makes the rules. That's the difference between the two philosophies. So that one was easy to answer.
Ben was alluding to the fact also that isn't it socialism for us to give benefits to employees? Essentially, that's what it is, medical care.
No, I mean, there's a difference, because that's done by a private employer, and it's a contractual relationship between the employer and the employee.
And that's true for senators and House of Representative people as well, and other government employees, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
But the difference where it stops there is, like, say, for example, from a Judeo-Christian viewpoint, we are told to take care of the weak, the infirm, the poor, widows, orphans, the elderly, those, the sick, you know, those in prison, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But nowhere in the scripture does it ever tell us to choke the snot out of one person to pay for it to give it to somebody else. Okay,
amen.
And you always want to remember that whatever government takes, somebody else, it has to, whatever government gives to one person, it must take from another person by threat of force, violence, seizure, or imprisonment. Okay, and it's a myth that the rich can pay for this. If you took all of the rich people in the U.S. making somewhere between anywhere above, like, say, $100,000 to $300,000, and you took all the money that they made every year, took all of it, you could run the country for about 10 days. Now where do you go after that? You got 355 days left. Well, the answer is you go to the little guy and you choke him. And that's why socialism is not a Christian value. Paul said, let him who does not work not eat.
Exactly. Let's see what Jim down Salinas has to say. Jim, real quick, how are you?
Oh, doing pretty well. You called me while I was at the dentist, by the way.
Oh.
So hopefully you can get back to me a little bit later after the program today.
I'll try.
But anyway, I've started seeing this kind of stuff when I was going to Napa Valley College in 1970. There were organizations such as MECHA and Students for a Democratic Society and other very left-wing organizations that were years ahead of time with a politically correct agenda.
Well, I'm glad that you got an observation there. I'm going to have to get back to you a little bit later about that, Jim, because we're running out of time. And, John, again, I want to thank you for being with us. The program ends at about a minute and a half now. I know there's hope. One of the things that people can do is dial into Steel on Steel, whether it be steelonsteel.com or listen to it on the various and sundry programs. Do a Google search on it, and I'll bet they could come up with the location on satellite or internet where your program can be heard. And once again, thank you very much for joining me. I really do appreciate it.
It was a fun hour, Dave.
Take care. Bye-bye now. Okay. Say hi to Carol for me. Well, John Loeffler's a friend of the family. He's been a contributor to Radio Liberty for a long time. I hate to have to cut people off like that, but calling at the end here of the program doesn't allow me enough time to say how much I appreciate everybody who listens to this program, praying for Dr. Stan and myself and all the others who are associated with getting the program out on the air. I'd like to ask for you to continue praying and prayerfully consider becoming a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Give that number a call, 800-544-8927. In the very least, get a copy of that free Radio Liberty resource packet, 800-544-8927. It won't cost you a penny. Your prayers don't cost you anything but your time, and they're invaluable. Won't you keep praying for us? Won't you keep praying for our nation? We'll see you tomorrow.